Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on your radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM, but you can stay up to date with everything going on right here at 92.9 FM ESPN by downloading the Odyssey app. You can stream anytime, anywhere, any place. It's free to download, free to listen. Just go and grab the Odyssey app in your app store and stay up to date with all of the great content here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. As always, glad that he is with us. My company, as he is on each and every Monday, is, of course, the head coach and team director of the Nike EYBL program, Team Thad, on Twitter, on X, at Dream Big Herd. Norton Herd IV, good day, sir.
Great day, great week, Jeff.
I think we might have on the wrong mic. You there? Let's see. There you go. I don't know.
Okay, great week. Great day.
Yes, now
sir.
We got you, buddy. Let's see, everybody, we are coming up on the program. It's, of course, Monday, so we will overreact to all that we saw on the weekend. We'll start first with the Tiger win, then we'll get into maybe some bigger picture. I felt like it was another weekend where I felt like college football was probably better. We had some, in the NFL, like we had some shocking maybe final scores, but it was largely, it felt like it was a day where the teams that were supposed to win were the teams that wound up winning. So it was a big favorites day yesterday, but we'll talk about that. Also going to welcome to the program Jason Munns in about 30 minutes or so. He spoke with Penny Hardaway following, or I should say at AAC Media Day. We'll talk to him about that conversation, also get his thoughts on the AAC preseason awards. We will get into the list during hour number two. We've had the college basketball top 25. The AP poll has been released. Mike McDaniel gave an update on Tua. Wanted to get into a few other things that we've seen happening around the country, including a trend that Pete Thamel has noticed. We'll maybe get into some NFL, or we'll get into some of the big games that we weren't quite able to discuss during hour number two as well, Terry's story. And then we will get out of here. But, Herd, I think I wanted to start first here. The Tigers go to Orlando, because that's where the game ends up getting played. Gets played at Camping World Stadium in front of what appeared to be 65,000 empty seats disguised as fans. Like, you knew it was going to be that type of environment when they moved it, whatnot. And it's one of those games where you don't know quite, like, when you get to the end, you're asking yourself, how do I feel? Mm-hmm. Because on the one hand, they completely dominated and controlled the entire game. They score 14 quick points right off the bat. Their first drive, opening nine plays, 75 yards, go right down and score. Then they did punt, I think, on their second drive. But then they turned a turnover into another touchdown, 14-0, like that. And largely you're sitting there going, okay, as long as we don't screw this up, we're going to win this game. And that's exactly how it played out. USF has to play their backup quarterback. They could do absolutely nothing on offense. And then Memphis gets another defensive score to kind of close it out. They win 21-3, but it wasn't exactly what you would call like an inspired performance. But I'm also, as you and I've talked about this season, it's like, at a certain point, are we going to lose sight of crediting wins? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's really the fundamental question with this game is, how do you feel about an quote-unquote ugly 18-point win? You covered, like, the line, it was bouncing all around. I think some people were saying they got it at like 10 before game time, but it didn't matter what number you got. Memphis covered that number. But at least in terms of offensively, it was a lot of clunkers. Like, let me read you the drive chart from the second quarter on. 7 plays, 22 yards, turnover on downs. 10 plays and punt. 3 plays, punt. 3 plays, punt. 4 plays, interception. 6 plays, punt. 7 plays, punt. 4 plays, punt. and then they kneeled it out to end the game. So they didn't really move the ball in the second half, but it was also one of those games where, you know, it's you'll see this in kind of like Central South Florida, where all of a sudden out of nowhere at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it just starts to downpour. And so, well, then you're not going to really, the passing game is probably not going to be quite as sharp. And really, it almost just felt like the game was just get in, get out, get the win, move on. But if you're in this mode where you're looking around the league, well, they certainly were not as impressive as Tulane when Tulane beat USF, but we can oftentimes get wrapped up into the transitive property of college football. It doesn't really matter one way or the other. It's like they had a job to do. They got in, they dominated defensively, and they got out. And one thing that I do think is clearly better about this team than any of Ryan's previous teams, the defense is noticeably better. Now, is it the type of defense that can carry you in a big game where you're going up against an explosive offense? I don't know, but it was clearly good enough in that one that you completely shut USF down. You never really thought, man, they're in trouble here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff. Once they realized to me that South Florida couldn't do anything,
yeah.
Like I don't know if the defense is great, but like once it started getting to the backup quarterback and the playmakers wasn't getting free, at that point, I feel like the offense kind of got stagnant, kind of got boring, kind of got complacent, and didn't show creativity. I felt like they were playing it safe.
Yeah.
And that's why it looked a little ugly, but in their head, South Florida was playing so bad that they was looking at it like, why, you know, probably potential risk anything. And so I get that on one hand. I'm the type of coach that, like, even if I feel like it's a certain way, I would like to win. So, yeah, you do got to credit wins. But I also think, like, sometimes when you get up, you also not playing this game no more. This is kind of one of my teaching methods, that you're preparing for the next game. You know what I mean? Because
yes,
you want to kind of still, you know, be sharp, be fresh still. Let's work on some things. Let's even, I mean, not try to embarrass nobody, but let's work on some trick plays. Let's do something. But to me, when you score 14 points that quick, now we got to get them, you know, get them their respect, get them their props for coming out ready to play. But when you score 14 so quick, and then to me, you don't score again for the rest of the game, it feels like your offense is in a slightly slump right now, if I'm not going too far with it.
I'd say, yeah. And it's like, I don't know if it's a, because this kind of comes on the heels of the reason why I noted is it felt very similar to the MTSU game in the sense that you never really doubted, you never thought there's a chance Memphis or loses the game, but you kind of were like, man, why is it this hard to move the football? Because USF is not exactly known as a defensive stalwart or a defensive power team. But it's also, I don't want to be overly critical for the sake of just being overly critical, because it was an odd game to watch. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like you didn't really know what to do with it afterwards. Like it didn't change my opinion one way or the other, but like at the same time, it's like, it's kind of two straight weeks where the offense looked pretty meh.
And I think that's what it's more about. Like, for me, and I think you're trying to say the same thing, I'm not being overly critical. Great team win. Let me repeat that. Great team win. You went out there, you handled business, but I think it is you ask yourself, is it a concern with the offense? I think
yes,
that's what it's more about. Is it a concern with the offense moving forward with some of the things we're trying to accomplish as a team, as a city, and things like that, and just all the aspirations we have that's based off of football, that I just think we're like, you know, we would like to see the offense a little bit more high-powered and stuff like that, you know, moving forward. Because like you say, the defense, I know they're a lot better. I don't really look at, you know, once you put the backup, and I'm going to be real with you, it didn't look like they could do much with one of our best high schools in Memphis, in South Florida. But it's just, you want to make sure that moving forward that our offense is doing enough to give us a chance to win. I think that's how we're looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, not to get too far into the weeds, but there's a number that gets tracked called offensive success rate. And essentially all it means is if you got a first and 10 play, did you gain, I think it's first and 10. It's like, did you gain four? Basically, it's like, did that play, you know, when you think back to like Pee Wee football, like, all right, if we get four yards a carry, we can run it three times. We're going to first down, move on. Like it's kind of like that. Memphis's success rate was only 24% on offense. For context, USF's was 23. So, like, you see what I'm saying? Like, it's that, I think, is the concern. But it's almost like, with how weird of a week it was, we've got the hurricane. Are we going to play the game? We find out on Friday, they just send the equipment truck. They're basically like, head to Florida. We'll figure it out. Like, we think the game's going to be in Orlando. You wind up, there's no atmosphere at the game whatsoever. And it was just kind of a sleepy, boring win. And it's almost like I don't want to raise my hand and be like, well, this is a problem. But the other aspect of it is when you start looking around to the other teams that they're going to be compared to, they're not flashing exactly on the eye test.
No, for sure. And you know what? I'm not a big excuse guy, but some of the stuff you just said is actually not excuses that we might can give them the benefit of the doubt. Because it was, you know, coaches and players, and you know this, Jeff, even you being, you know, radio personality, everybody in life that's successful have a routine.
Yes.
And now you have to be able to
adjust. Especially football teams.
Yeah. You have to be able to adjust because life's going to throw you curveballs. But for the most part, you have a routine, so, and you're dealing with young men, so I can see how that could be a little bit of a, you know, hassle with, you know, the date been moved and this, and you're not knowing yet, and there's no, whether it was all USF fans, still, even hearing boo, you know, just being with a, you know, practice atmosphere, you know, and I know people could
say. Just any kind of environment, you know, just any kind of atmosphere, like, you know what I mean?
Anything, I think, would have helped, so. We can get them a slight pass on that because that to me, those are not excuses. Them are valid points that could have, you know, raised awareness to play and stuff like that.
Okay. So unless you've got anything else, like to me, that was just like the ultimate. I mean, I made the comparison for Ole Miss fans. It was the exact same thing as watching the South Carolina game. Like, it's like you realized very quickly Ole Miss was going to win the game. The entire second half, there was like no scoring. Neither team was really, you knew one team couldn't do anything to the other. The other team was like, we're not going to make a mistake and make this a game again. And so it just, it rolled right along. I think the other overreaction that I had this weekend, as awesome and as entertaining as the Ohio State-Oregon game was, I came away thinking the only team that I have felt like has consistently been impressive week in, week out has been Texas.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Matter of fact, like you said, Texas start off slow, but they end up in Ohio, and Oklahoma is a good team. They end up letting you know they're for real this year. And granted, Jeff, while that was on, and you were right before the show, college was pretty good because I remember at one point I was watching Florida, Tennessee,
yep.
And then you had Ohio State and Oregon on, and then it was a third game on LSU Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And I was like, and everybody was within at that point a field goal or a touchdown. And I was like, this is pretty amazing. And Colorado haven't even came on yet with they star studded people that was there. So with all that being said, it feels like as close as Alabama kept that game and stuff like that Texas might be a runaway favorite a little bit. I'm still high on Georgia. And, you know, being biased, I do think Miami can compete with a lot of these guys. With some people like, we don't know here. But so that's my take on that.
No, because to your point, it was almost like the nightcap in particular felt more like an NFL weekend where you had a bunch of one-score games and you're like, I don't know how this is going to go. And this was kind of the other thing that I was thinking about. It's like Tennessee's in a similar situation as Memphis was with this weekend where you win a game, but your offense didn't look great. Yet at the same time, like, how it's almost like, are we going to start docking teams for not looking impressive? Because I think there's a couple of, like, I can kind of look at it either way. So, for instance, if you take Missouri from early in the season, they were not looking impressive. And at the same time, it's like, well, they're winning the games, and maybe they'll get into these big games, and they'll have a little different plan. Well, there was probably some cause for concern with Missouri, and we saw what we did against Texas A&M. Doesn't mean like the season's over with. I think that's kind of the other thing fans are going to have to adjust to. It's just going to be a lot more week to week. But at the same time, it's like, should we pay attention when teams, when you think teams are in positions to be impressive that they're not? Like, to me, Miami's kind of the same thing. It's like, okay, if you want to criticize and say that they've had two close games that didn't have any business being close, well, I can also point out, it's like, well, they were down 25 points in the fourth quarter, or whatever, 18 in the fourth quarter. They come back and win the game. Like, I'm at least going to acknowledge that as well. Same thing. They were down two scores against Virginia Tech in the fourth quarter. They come back and win. It's. I think that's kind of the balancing act of how much stock to put into winning versus teams that are kind of like, let's just say the games are too close for comfort. It's the thing that I give Texas credit. Like, it was obvious Oklahoma was not going to be able to score.
Mm-hmm.
And they were clunky on offense to start the game. Ewers comes back after the injury. And they never, like, flexed on offense, but they were obviously good enough on offense, and there was nothing really that Oklahoma could do about it. But to me, it's almost like every game that Texas has had the chance to kind of, like, showcase, we're a lot better and we don't have to play well. Like, to me, that's kind of the thing. Texas is not playing well, and they're winning by multiple scores, whereas the other teams, it felt like you needed a few breaks to kind of catch the right way. Like, Tennessee, in the end, like, Florida had a lot of coaching miscues, and then, I mean, is that game different because Graham Mertz gets hurt? Like, it certainly felt like it, but at the same time, it's like, that's what happens. Like, guys get hurt, and then you found a way to win the game, and I think that's kind of, I think that's going to be the theme of this year, because I think too many people got obsessed early with what is the resume going to be of a playoff team, and I think what we're seeing right now is, I think the teams that are going to be the playoff teams, they're the teams that get in these games and they just figure out a way to win them. Like, to me, like, that's going to be kind of the difference between Tennessee's chances and Ole Miss's chances. Ole Miss last year was 4-0 in one-score games. This year they played 2 one-score games. They're 0-2. Is Ole Miss a bad team? I don't think so. Like, are they a great team? Probably not. But, like, they're certainly not a bad team. But now Ole Miss is going to be in this weird, Ole Miss is now kind of a social experiment, because Ole Miss is a portal-heavy team. It's a very expensive roster. And all of a sudden, like, the season's not over, but it kind of is. And they're going into a bye week off of that kind of loss. And what is the mental makeup of that team going to be the rest of the way? Because there's still a path where if you win out, you go 10-2, that means you will have had wins at Arkansas, or you'll have a win over Oklahoma, at Arkansas, win over Georgia, Florida, Mississippi State. Like, it's not the most amazing resume, but it's still going to be a 10-2 SEC team with wins over, you're going to probably hang your hat on Georgia, but then, like, that will be the question of, like, is the Georgia win going to be, like, you now get into the situation of when you beat somebody, it almost hurts your case because you give them an extra loss. But I do think that's going to be kind of what I think we're going to start to see that's going to differentiate playoff teams versus the non-playoff teams. It's, what are they going to do in these close games where they don't play well? And to me, it's like Tennessee's had two of those games. They went 1-1. And if Ole Miss would have just split with Kentucky and LSU, I don't care which one. If you just win one of them, they're fine. But instead now, you lost both of them, and you're fighting uphill.
No, I agree. Back to your first initial point with the Tennessee game, and you were like the Memphis and them. I do agree with that, Jeff. One thing I would say, kind of like how Miami came back, they didn't control it. They actually should have lost it. I'm going to be real. Florida And it made me feel good as a Hurricane fan because I'm like, if they finna beat Tennessee, because Tennessee in front of us on some polls, I'm like, and we drug Florida. Granted, they might be in the middle of the year now and have gotten better. And you know what's crazy? Florida kind of Tennessee nemesis, because I have a lot of Tennessee fans, and they be like, no matter how great we are, we just end up losing to Florida a lot on our
years. I mean, they were, I looked it up, as a favorite, as a home favorite against Florida, like they were 1-9 against the spread. I think they only won 2 of the games.
Yeah. So Tennessee fans were nervous, right? And Florida gave them something to be nervous about. Now, as far as the old missing things, I do think that if an SEC team is with a 2-win loss, with a 2-loss, I think they should make the playoffs. I'm not being biased. If it's 12 teams, right, where we at,
yeah,
5 of them got to come from the SEC. I'm not saying automatically, but I'm just being real. I don't know. I know it's probably not going to work like that, but I think you got to have at least 4 for sure. Some years 5, 3 to 4 from, I know it's not going to go like this from the big, I'm just saying if we're putting the top 12 in, but I know we got to do our at-larges and we got to do all our conference championships and stuff like that, but with the new SEC, with Texas and Oklahoma and the amount of, I think at the beginning of the year, they had like, what, 7 top 25 teams or something like.
Right now, let's see. I think, so you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the top 16 in the coaches poll. And then the AP poll, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No, I'm sorry. It's 8. You have 8 of the top 19 in the AP poll, and then you have 8 of the top 16 in the coaches poll.
So I think with that competition alone, I know some people cry when they hear this. Out of 12 people, they should get like 5 teams in the, we trying to say the best teams, but I know that probably mathematically couldn't always happen because you go get all your conference winners and then you got to get.
So we know this for a fact. We know we're going to have 5 conference champions. So you're going to have whoever wins the SEC, whoever wins the Big Ten, whoever wins the ACC is going to be the 3 seed, and then you're now in this weird spot in the Big 12 where the teams that are leading the Big 12, BYU, Iowa State, these are the teams that everyone is kind of like waiting for them to lose because they like preseason expectations. But if those teams, like if one of those teams ends up going 11-1 or 12-1, wins the title, then I think they will for sure be the 4th team. But you've now walked into this reality of Boise State's 1 loss is at Oregon. And Oregon has right now the second, you know, if not the best win of the year, the second best win of the year. And that was a 3-point loss for Boise. Are they really going to get knocked for that? There's the chance that they could wind up being the 4 seed. But those are 5 teams that you know you're getting in. And then the question will be, does Clemson do enough that, to me, the real question is, can the ACC get a second team in, whether it be Clemson, whether it be, I think at this point that's going to be the real question is, can Clemson do enough that not just the winner of Miami Clemson gets the spot, it's both of them. And so then if you're there, well, you know, at least the Big Ten's going to get, I think it's fair to say, so now we're at, so we're at 6. The Big Ten's probably going to get at least 3, so tack on another 2. Now you're at 8. That's going to be the real question is, can they get 5? Because I do also think this is a fair rebuttal when people are saying, well, you know, look at, they have 8 of the top 16 or 8 of the top 18, however you want to say it. How much credit do they kind of get for playing each other? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
Like, is it kind of a self-fulfilling, you know, like, yeah, like, it's like, well, they're in the SEC. And so, That to me kind of becomes the questions, like how many of these teams are going to actually like make a case that we deserve to be here?
No, I agree. I guess that's the price you pay with being in the SEC, and I guess that's why that over the years the SEC have done so great in the playoffs. Because on the flip side, and I'm a, you know, my team the ACC, but on the flip side, I feel like a lot of other teams that have won their conference or that's getting in it, if they was in the SEC, they wouldn't get in it. And I was one of the people last year that felt like Georgia and Alabama should have made the playoffs. Like, I don't care who else got kicked out of it, because on one hand, I don't see how you throw a team out that's back-to-back champs and went undefeated all that all this time, and then just because they lose to Alabama, now Alabama, yes, the SEC, but I think both of them should have got it. I think it's not close that Georgia was still a top four team, if not a top two team, if not a top three team last year or whatever like that. Just being realistic.
Yeah, it kind of got – the thing is, though, it got weird because you had 12-1 Texas.
Mm-hmm.
They went to Tuscaloosa and won by double digits. Mm-hmm. So it was basically you had when Washington beats Oregon for the second time, goes undefeated. It's like, well, you're not keeping undefeated Washington out, mm-hmm. and you were not keeping undefeated Michigan out. So then you had a collection of four teams going for the last two spots. So you had Florida State, who gets their quarterback hurt, and they looked awful in the ACC championship game. So that data point, but they were still undefeated, by the way. And then you have Georgia, Alabama, and Texas. Well, it's like Texas was going to get the tiebreaker because of the win against Alabama on the road. Like that, mm-hmm. they were going to kind of tip the cap to them. And then you get to this spot where, all right, well, I guess we're just going to put in the SEC champion. It's like we're going to leave whoever loses the game, they're out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are going to basically just say, like, we don't think Florida State without their quarterback's not good enough.
For sure, for sure.
But, like, now, this is the other thing, though, that I keep wondering. I'm not certain. I think I would always say this. Whoever the best team in the SEC is, I have no problem writing for that team being the best team. Where I start to wonder is after that. Because I thought this was interesting. I looked this up this morning because I was like, man, it feels like there's like a lot of underdogs in the SEC. They're, if not keeping it close, like they're having a lot of success. So last year, SEC underdogs throughout the whole SEC schedule went 18-35-2 against the spread. Of the 18 covers, only 7 won outright. Through just week 7 this year, SEC underdogs are 18-6 against the spread with 9 outright wins. And 9 of those outright wins, 5 of those teams have been 9.5-point underdogs or more. We've had essentially 5 double-digit underdogs win. And so when everyone's like, well, put that into context, I guess this would be my argument. What if the good teams just aren't that good and that everyone else is like, so the teams that we think are going to be good, they're not flexing like that. Because what it was last year was like the good teams won, the good teams covered.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's like, Texas keeps winning and winning big, but that's really about it. Like,
I think, Jeff, I'm looking at it from the other way around. I just think the SEC is that good. I think some of these guys who are double-digit underdogs, that if they went to, we got some middle, and when I say we, I'm just talking SEC. We got some guys in the middle of the SEC and lower that I think could go to the Big Ten and ACC and other conferences, wherever boys at, and win the conference, if not be top two. And so for me, I don't think our teams the SEC, I just think they're that good. And I think the Big Ten is really close to it because you got Penn State in them. But even the piggyback what we was talking about from last year, yes, I would have put Texas out of it because I know that sounds very crazy.
But they did have the worst. They had probably the worst loss.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I looked at it too. Everybody was talking about the win against Alabama, but then I was saying, okay, but look at everybody lost. I think they lost against Oklahoma State or something.
No, their loss was Oklahoma in the Red River. And
yeah, yeah, Oklahoma wasn't
was
that good.
9-3,
yeah, they lost like
yeah.
3 games.
Oklahoma, I think, lost to Oklahoma State in the year.
That's what happened.
And who else did they lose to?
Yeah, it was something
they
crazy.
They lost to Kansas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they lost to Kansas like a week or two later after that. I remember that. So that was my argument to that, and I just felt like I know we're not deep on this, but I think that was a kind of for Georgia not to even be able to defend their title. I still think it's crazy, and I think Kirby Smart handled it well. He said, "I think the SEC champ should go," but I just think that, and then we're not just talking about one time; we talking about a two time, and because of that, I know they got to make money now and everything, Jeff. But I think we should have gradually got to 12. I think we should have just did 6 this year. Then went to 8 a couple years because I think it never is going to really get over 6. You feel what I'm saying? Yeah. You get what I'm trying to say with like.
Like how many really teams can win it?
Yeah.
It's going to be the real question. Because, I mean, I do think if you do want to take the side that the SEC, part of what we're seeing is, okay, well, these are the schools that have the most money. These are the schools that care the most. Therefore, they're going to have more good rosters because they're going to have NIL to do it all. And so essentially what you're seeing is kind of NFL light where you have a bunch of rosters that are pretty similar. You have one roster in Texas that appears to be better than the rest. And then Georgia, Alabama seem to have maybe a greater depth of talent. And then you kind of have schools like Tennessee, Ole Miss, LSU, A&M, maybe Missouri, like they're kind of in that next tier and they're all kind of the same.
Let me ask you this, Jeff. The last schools you just named, you said Tennessee, Ole Miss, Missouri, and LSU, right?
Yeah, and A&M.
Them five, you tell me if any one of them wasn't in the Big 12 right now, they wouldn't be the favorite to win it. You tell me if any one of them wasn't in the ACC right now, they wouldn't be. It'll be them in Miami to win it. See, that's how I'm also looking at it, too. Like, I think Ole Miss in the Big 12 is Big 12 champions.
I think you're right. I'm a little iffy on Missouri.
Okay.
I think to your point, if
Tennessee and Ole Miss,
Tennessee,
for sure.
A&M, LSU, Ole Miss, yeah. I think they would be favored to win the Big 12. Where I stumble in the ACC is we might have written off Clemson a little too soon because they had a really bad day against Georgia. But I still think that I would have Miami over. I think Miami's roster is better. And I think that's the other thing. Miami's getting better quarterback play.
For sure.
And that's kind of been the one key difference. All right, let's talk a little Tiger basketball. We'll do that with Munns next. We'll take a quick break. We're back with Jason Munns right here on Jeff Wright and Company. 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Munns is, of course, the Tiger basketball beat writer for The Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on Twitter on X, at Munsley. Joins us each and every Monday on the program. Munns, what are we listening to?
Can I just first start by saying I love it when you give it a little extra few seconds before...
Just let it marinate.
Before launching into everything. I love that. But this is Bones Don't Rust by the Mountain Goats.
I see why they named the song that. Your bones don't rust.
Yeah,
there you go.
Bones don't rust. It's basically one guy, but he's got a band. They're called the Mountain Goats, and this is from the album Bleed Out, which is essentially a concept album during the pandemic. The main guy, who's also a really talented author as well. I'm currently reading one of his novels called Devil House. But anyway, he spent a lot of time during the pandemic watching like 80s action movies.
Okay, love it.
And so he recorded a concept album called Bleed Out, and it's basically just a bunch of songs about that sort of conjure that feel, that 80s action movie feel. And
just watching like Stallone movies, Van Damme, Tom Cruise.
Exactly. I want to say there's even a song called First Blood on that album.
There we go.
It's good stuff.
All right. You spoke with Penny Hardaway, and it's up over at commercialappeal.com. And there's a few things that I wanted to start first here, because it's certainly a different tone than even what we heard from the summer, and you even addressed that with him. Do you get the sense that it's intentionally a different tone? Like, I was reading it, I was like, well, this is clearly a different tone. It's like, was it coached up to be this way? Is this Like, how did you view it? Because it clearly to me was a different style.
I don't know if I don't know that I would go so far as to say coached up. Maybe
advised.
No, like almost unintentionally. Just like through the course of the last few months, you know, there's a new athletic director in town. There's a new sport administrator in town, and Tim Duncan, a guy that Penny knows very, very well and trusts and has a lot of things in common with. I'm not so sure that it was like a conscious, intentional. I'm not sure that what I got yesterday in Dallas is the result of some sort of conscious, intentional shift. I just think it's like there's new voices around, there's new energy around, and maybe that seems to be that's just my read of it, that it kind of is rubbed off on Penny a little bit.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the things that, you know, a lot of things that he said are, I think, a lot of the things that people have been wanting to hear. And, yeah. Like, to me, it's one of those things where I also viewed it's like, okay, if that's genuine, like, that's really good. I also kind of view it, it's like, it's easy to say it preseason.
Sure.
Like, and as the season plays out. But I do think, like, I think oftentimes, and like I know it's year 7, and so it's not like it's as if this is a completely new program or whatnot, but it's like he is only in 7 years of college coaching. Like there is still learning that has to be done on the job.
Yeah, I mean, and he even pointed that out during my interview with him. I didn't include, I was running short on word count, so I didn't have room to include everything, but you know, he said that he was like, I didn't have 5 or 6. I didn't have the luxury of sort of going incognito and sitting on someone's bench for 5 or 6 years. Like I'm learning on the fly, like I in front of everybody. And so that can have a tendency sometimes to, not be the best way to do it. Just because you're under the microscope. I mean, and we're not just talking about a regular person here. This is Penny Hardaway. So, like, it's even further exacerbated just because of who he is. So, that should never get lost, is he came into this game with no college experience. And so he is learning. He is still figuring things out and feeling his way through this. And that's, you know, that was one of the points he made, is that that was the first quote I had in there, that he admits that he has made mistakes. And but you know, you get better every year, and hopefully year 7. I mean, that was the other thing he said. He said, it's year 7. I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself now to get this right. And so, yeah, I mean, just overall, I mean, the way I put it, and when I teased it out on social media, the story, I put that his interview was not only candid, but also refreshingly revealing. So, it does feel like he's feeling differently in some form or fashion. And I think it's not only going to be for the betterment of, you know, the fans and people like us, but also for him and those around the program.
He also mentioned the anonymous letter, and I thought it was interesting. What did you make of his admission or acknowledgement of the anonymous letter?
Yeah, I mean, the way he, this is the, what he said to me about the way he is choosing to look at that thing, is that he looks at it as it must have come from a hater, or it must have come from like a place of hate. Somebody's either jealous of him or something. There's somebody's mad at him for something, and that's the only way he is sort of like You know, that's how he sits. Like that's how he perceives that letter and the contents of that letter. Obviously, he wouldn't go into specifics about any of the specific allegations that are within the letter. But, and I asked him too. I said, you know, do you know who wrote it? do you wonder who wrote it? And he said no, and that he hasn't wasted any energy, like trying to figure it out, because if he did, that has the potential to turn into quite the rabbit hole that he doesn't necessarily have the luxury of going down right now, with all the other plates that he's got spinning. You know, we talked at length about his mother. I didn't have room in the story to include that, but we did talk at length about his mother. He's talked about it in the past this summer, but obviously the team and obviously the NCAA thing and the coaching staff stuff, like he's got a lot going on. And so he chooses not to waste any energy trying to figure out who wrote that letter.
Did you ask him whether or not he felt a certain way about the school acknowledging it?
No. But I did not get the sense at all from him that he disagreed with that decision. I mean, you know, by now we all kind of feel like we know Penny, and I see, at least this is where I guess I'll speak for myself. Like, I feel like if he had been questioned about it before it was made public, I feel like he probably would have, you know, acknowledged it too. Just feeling like I know how Penny handles things. So, no, to answer your question, no, I did not ask him specifically about it. But again, I would be very surprised if he didn't like it or, you know, had a problem with it.
We're talking with Jason Munns, of course, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Follow him on Twitter on X @Munsley. Also, make sure you're listening, downloading, subscribing to the Tiger Basketball Commercial Appeal podcast. Okay, so let's flip to the news that we got late last week. Memphis picked second in the AAC. Essentially, it looked to me like if you just looked at the voting, basically UAB and Memphis were 1 and 2 on every ballot, except UAB got 9 first place votes, whereas Memphis got 4, right? Was it 9-4?
Yeah. 9-4, yep.
Was any of it surprising to you?
No, just because, you know, by now we know how these things work. We know how, you know, it's the fifth year in a row that Memphis has been picked second. Even the year before that, the year where they were picked to, where they were not picked second since Penny Hardaway got here, they were tied for first with Houston. So, like, since Penny got here, they've never been picked like as the outright preseason favorite by the league's coaches to win the conference. So why would this year be any different? Especially given how things went last year, and it's yet another season of a complete, near complete roster overhaul. It didn't surprise me, honestly. You know, and this is no knock on Memphis or the job that they've done this off season, but honestly, I was a little surprised that Memphis got 4 first place votes. I mean, do I think that Memphis is going to win the league? Yes, I do. I mean, although, listen, I think people might be selling UAB a little bit short. Yes, they lost a couple of big pieces, but they not only bring back a couple of really nice pieces, several really nice pieces, but they also added some, at least on paper, really talented players. Andy Kennedy is still there. But again, I think that to me, and from where I sit and where a lot of the metrics people sit, Memphis is the best team in this conference this year. And I think they will win the regular season title. That's Penny's goal. He stated that out loud. That the goal is to win the regular season conference title. But at the same time, these preseason coaches polls, they they've gone a certain way now for a lot of years, and it doesn't surprise me that they were not picked to win it.
Does the way that Penny's talking right now, does it suggest to you that he really does like this roster?
Yes. And I asked him about that yesterday, you know, like, even though, because this is how I kind of phrased the question. I was like, even though it might not have as much depth as you normally like to have, simply because he's only got 11 scholarship players.
I'm not sure that's a problem, by the way.
I don't know. I know. Believe me, I get that. I agree with you. But, you know, Penny likes to play a lot of guys. But anyway, so I kind of was like, I know it doesn't have as much depth as you like normally, but it seems like in terms of fit, this roster might be the best you've had in terms of just overall fit and role definition and that sort of thing. And he agreed. And I think that's genuine. I truly believe that that's how he feels. He talked a little bit yesterday about how it remains to be seen whether it's going to be the best, most productive roster that he's had right now. The leader for that, I mean, he said this specifically, the leader is the Kendrick Davis, DeAndre Williams year with Elijah McCadden and DeMarie Franklin and Keontae Kennedy and Chandler Lawson and Malcolm Dandridge. You know, he's like, that's the most wins I've had in the season, that roster, since I've been here. So that's clearly the best. It remains to be seen whether this roster can outperform that one. But I do think that he feels a lot more confident in this roster than he did in that roster at this time that year, simply because he's had almost all of this roster on campus since June. And, I can't argue with that. I mean, you know, so yeah, I do believe that he is not, it's not just, you know, the normal coach talking up his team in the preseason. I think he genuinely feels confident. I believe the way he said it was like, if you were in practice every day and saw what I see every day and hear what I hear and know what I know, you'd be confident too. And I believe it.
All right, let's wrap up here. We'll get our first look at them tomorrow night when they take on UNC in the exhibition game, the Hoops for St. Jude tip-off classic. You can still go get your tickets now. What are kind of the things that you're interested to see? What are you going to make note of?
I want to first of all see how Tyrese Hunter and PJ Haggerty work together. You know, that's something I also wrote about yesterday. I talked to both of those guys over there in Dallas about, you know, is it like what is it? Are you guys basically left brain right brain, or are you two distinct individuals? You know, are you guys, you know, have you guys had enough time to get in sync? So, you know, regardless of what they said, I that's one of the things that I'm going to be looking for most, and in large part because I think that how they work together, how they complement each other, how they push each other, and how they, how they initiate everything is going to be, it's going to largely influence how good this team can be. So I think that's number one. Number two, I'm going to be very interested to see how the rotation shakes out. Who's going to be first off the bench? How much run is Jared Harris going to get? You know, we saw him in the pro day and stuff, and he was looking really, really good. So how much do we see him? And then probably the other thing is, the big man. I want to see Moose out there and see what Dane Danger's got, and and can they be competitive? Can they win? You know, like that's obviously not as important as the other stuff, but also still important.
Munns, we appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
That is Jason Munns, of course, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. When we come back, let's get into the list. Let's talk a little bit more football that we saw from over the weekend. We'll discuss all that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.